This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, it's so good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Today we're going to talk about cyber warfare. Lots of exciting things going on with that. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. And in the second half of the program, visit our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. People tell us that is about their favorite part of the whole show. Remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free, online, webcast at thepromiseoftomorrow.biz. Promiseoftomorrow.biz. And if you go there, on the right-hand side of your screen, you're going to see a link to MetroCon. M-E-T-R-O-C-O-N. Being held October 22nd at the Arlington Convention Center, produced by IEEE, the Electrical Engineers Association, and sponsored by Lockheed Martin and Encore. One of the key elements of MetroCon this year is developing and deploying secure systems or cybersecurity. And with that, today, we have a very special guest. We have John Adams. He's the author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk. And John is an authority on cyber warfare. He's got some very concerning things to say. I almost said scary things to say, but very concerning things to say about how we need to protect ourselves during this very vital time. And I don't know if you saw the presidential debate on Wednesday night, this past Wednesday. But it was amazing. These people that are running for presidency know nothing about some of the things that they're talking about. It should be welcoming the ambassador from China, because China is doing all this cyber penetration of us and doesn't realize that China's not the big bad bully on the street. It's the United States. We do more cyber maneuvering worldwide than China or Russia or any place else. But nobody wants to talk about that. All we want to talk about is how bad they are. So I found that debate pretty interesting, and the amount of lack of knowledge of people that are running for president is just beyond me. All right, well, I guess enough of that. Well, this time I want to introduce you to a fascinating author, John Adams, author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk. He works with risk management and competitiveness with companies and communities to help protect us from the bad guys, and we're really fortunate to have him on the line today. Welcome to the program, John.
Good to be here. Good to join you.
Now, tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote, the Cyber Blackout book. What prompted you to write that?
Well, in visiting with companies across Texas and across the country, and in dealing with agencies in Washington, we've got a lot of literature and a lot of books on programming and general background on this emerging cyberspace arena that we're in. And one of the things that as I went to the meetings and talked to agencies, and especially talked to C-level individuals, presidents of corporate entities as well as city managers, is there was no book out there looking at, you know, what the threat was and an overview of the magnitude of what could happen. So what I did is step back. Instead of writing some type of programming book, I'm not a program, I stepped back and said, hey, what are the concerns that a city manager or corporate president who's got oil and gas lines or utility lines or whatever, what should they be concerned about, and what should they be aware of the impact of a cyber incident on themselves, their community, or their company?
Okay, so you encapsulated that in the book, and that's mainly one of the tools that you're using when you go and you help one of these municipalities or one of these companies or water supply places or something else to help solve the problems. Or is it mainly just to make people aware of the problems? Are there solutions?
Well, there is two parts of this. There, the awareness level is extremely important. A lot of times the can is kicked down the road to where, you know, when you have a computer problem in your company or whatever, you say, well, go down the hall to IT. The magnitude of a cyber attack is way beyond the IT people. There's going to have to be tough decisions made to triage. If a town gets hit on their grid and knocks out their 911 and their power and their water supply, and things begin to cascade, who's going to make the decisions about what goes on? That's the first part of it. The second thing is the awareness level transposes into making sure then from the top down there is an awareness of who you're dealing with, what emails you're opening, is our decisions being made to protect your systems. For instance, most of the decisions are being made by the county department. So the county department thinks it costs too much to encrypt something, and they say, well, we'll save that, and they fail to encrypt something like they did in South Carolina with their tax office for a few thousands of dollars. They got hacked, and I go over it in the book, and they lost just tens of thousands of Social Security numbers and names, and then it cost them millions of dollars to repair a decision that's made by somebody who maybe didn't have all the information, but that's the whole point. Someone has got to step in and make sure that you understand this is for real. The internet is not safe. There are people that want to break in, and they're doing it by the second at all entities around our country.
Okay, and then the other thing would be the solutions, and I guess I have to ask you about our power grid.
Well, the solution is the industries slowly but surely are really ramping up, especially utilities. One of the big components that hits all the industries is this SCADA systems, which is the control systems that turn on and off power flow, fuel flow. They're monitor control systems that are part and parcel of our economy in all different areas. And so there is an enhanced amount of training. They are bringing people on to do forensic analysis to say, you know, let somebody be the bad guy to try to hack. So they're slowly but surely doing things to attempt to harden or protect their entities. But the old story adage is they can be safe and protect and stop 100 different attempts. The bad guys only have to get through one time.
Yeah.
And that therein lies, you know, almost a real. It is the challenge, but that doesn't mean you do not do everything you can to protect what you have.
Well, we
we're so connected. I mean, which makes that challenge even bigger.
Yeah, we proved that those SCADA systems can be well compromised, I think, with a worm called Stuxnet back a few years ago, which was somehow snuck into Iran and really messed up their nuclear their nuclear activity. Isn't that correct?
Oh yeah, and that's one that got, you know, all the publicity. For every one of those, I've got a list in the book. There are probably thousands, and I've got two pages of some of the top hits. In that same type of process where they've gone in and somehow either with a thumb drive or an insider threat or some malicious intent drop that on the system and put that malware into the system, and whoa, once it starts to run, and probably they put it in there, probably it hid and was dormant for 4 or 5 months when everybody was relaxed, and then they begin to ramp that up and they begin to melt down. you know, the machines one at a time, and, you know, the monitor said everything was fine, but they're looking out there on the floor and everything's smoking and getting ready to burn. So if this could happen, this has happened with pipelines, utilities, transformers, water supply, because we're, and the other real threat, I think, is we have got a lot of old stuff out there.
Yeah.
Old systems that just were not designed or hardened to stop somebody from doing this.
Yeah, I've been told by my engineering friends that if Westinghouse or Edison were to walk into a modern power plant, they'd recognize all the equipment. So.
Yeah. Not a whole lot's changed. It's the connectivity that's the dangerous equipment that produces the power. Not worrying about that. It's that interface where we've thrown in this technology with SCADAs and that type of stuff that where the vulnerability is.
Yeah, the SCADA systems are being used to just to, on everything with our power grids and, of course, so you mentioned with water supply and with all sorts of different things. It's really pretty pervasive. Mm-hmm. So being able to compromise that would have to be quite a challenge. The Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association, TREIA, notified us this morning that they are planning to make recommendations and work to redesign the power grid. Now, I don't have any idea what exactly they have in mind, and I presume one of these days I'm going to call them up and going to ask them. But if you were going to make some recommendations for redesigning the power grid, what would you tell them?
Well, I guess there's a number of things. Obviously, have better redundancy. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. They need to compartmentalize things better. So if an area goes out, they could stop the cascading roll, the brownout or the blackout. Mm-hmm. Update, number one, or we just already talked about, update their technology, their SCADA, train their employees on who and how can have access to the system. Vet their vendors. The way they got into Target was through the air conditioning. This is public knowledge. The way they got into Target was through their HVC vendor. Somebody hacked into that and came in the back door to do damage, two Christmases ago, at Target. Well, there are a lot of vendors to the utility industry, and they're good people. That's not the issue. The issue is the bad guys somehow penetrate one of the vendors without the vendor knowing it. Once they're in that, they then have a straight line into the system, to a utility system, and can do a lot of damage. So there's a number of things that all have to be done basically at the same time, because there's no one item. There's this mantra you hear, well, we got a firewall. That is just total bogus. That story worked 5-10 years ago. We got a good firewall. With what the systems they have now, they can go through a firewall in a second. Without encryption, without updated technology, without internal controls, without training of your personnel, that firewall stuff is worthless. Just absolutely worthless. It's like the bad guys. Once they get through the barbed wire and inside the compound, they're there.
Yeah.
All the barbed wire in the world and the tall fences, it's not going to do anything if they've got through the wire and into the facility. That's another thing. This is not a physical thing. So it doesn't matter how high the walls are around your facility or how many chain link fences you have. Those days are totally over.
Encore Electric Delivery told me a few weeks ago that what they do is they've got a team of hackers who are practicing trying to break into the system so they can stay one step ahead of the saboteurs. Is that something that you think is a
good... They're very smart, and this is emerging, and we've seen this in the last year or two. In the last year, where now, instead of not just contracting someone to come in to attempt to have, they're keeping people on staff to do everything they can to play black hats and, you know, to try to penetrate their system. Mm-hmm. And they're smart for doing that. And thinking every way to go around, penetrate, to get into it. It's better for them to find it than the bad guys to find it. And it's a very, they probably aren't going to get a lot of kudos or, no one will ever know what they've stopped by doing it. But, But the fact that they're doing that and are aggressive in doing it, I think you're going to see that. You're going to see that more and more in companies. That's the next coming thing. The problem is we don't have enough folks trained or in training to do what needs to be done. We don't have enough people who know how to do that at a skill level to do it. That there with the number of companies we have, and that's another challenge, is having the trained people to do what needs to be done to do that role that they're doing there at that company.
So if all the critical infrastructure companies in this nation decide that they want to copy that, they'd have a hard time finding the workers capable of being able to wear the black hats, right?
Yes. And it costs. These guys are not, these ladies and gentlemen are not cheap, and they shouldn't be. I mean, they are, you know, they're good at what they do. I mean, they have to be good. And, you know, they're just good, and there's just not a long list of them out there because we have not trained and done that to provide those folks to come on. They aren't coming out of the universities, I can tell you that.
Oh, really?
No. They're behind them. Universities are behind the curve big time. Things in the industry and the hacker world is moving so fast that their universities are in a total catch-up mode. And that's, they're there to educate and teach basics, and there is research being done, but it's not. It's the industry that's going to have to do this.
Now
we hope we've got some computer. Well, there's not enough computer people in the pipeline. See, that's another thing. And also, you've got to have individuals that can get security clearances. U.S. nationals, so it gets more complicated when you start filtering out who you can and who you want to, and especially what about the company if they're dealing with a DOD contract? You know, they've got to be careful about who they put around their IT equipment.
Boy, I guess, you know. If you just tuned in, we're talking to John Adams. He's author of Cyber Blackout, When the Lights Go Out, Nation at Risk, and he's got some pretty enlightening things to tell us. And we've only kind of touched the surface, I think. But it looks like the whole nation is at risk in various different ways. And we think about it with our power grid. But there's also our water supply, which is crucial. I mean, you touch on that in your book, too, I think, don't you, John?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, there's a chart in there that I start at the top. And the first one is clearly electricity. But then if you just think what that is hooked to, meaning driving the power source into water pumps, water power, down all the way to your, hospitals, distribution network. How about the supply chain? You know, think what happens. You know, the supply chain in this country is just really tight. I mean, we really are trying to operate in a just-in-time environment, but if you you disrupt that, you break into that and slow down the switches on the railroad and disrupt the FAA, then you've got a real problem. In the chart, I have critical as electrical, and then it comes down to emergency service and public health, and then prime is the one is exactly where we put water, telecommunications, and oil and gas and industry. Just think, if the power goes off, you can't pump gas at the gas stations.
Yeah.
Remember, this happened up on the East Coast during the hurricane, Sandy.
Yeah.
So that was a hurricane, and I refer to that. That was a hurricane, and they were down for 10 days. And, of course, they were able to work around it and everything. But, you take that down, and you basically can just totally disrupt our economy, our emergency services, and you know.
Well, not just not just a hurricane, but about what a little less than 15 years ago, a tree limb fell on a power line in Ohio and shut down a cascading power failure all over the East Coast. And I think that is a real big example of what can happen with a cascading power failure that has nothing to do with a major event like a hurricane that we can see coming, but something totally unexpected.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to you said the group was going to get together to see what they could do. You know, if that would have been better compartmentalized, then they could have stopped stopped it at some point, which, you know, it's easy for me to say. I'm sure someone is listening to it and saying, oh, yeah, that's real easy for you to say that. But that was in Ohio, and it went all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. Somewhere in there, you know, there needed to be stops to compartmentalize as best they can. And once it started rolling, and that's a good example of SCADA's, the command and control systems being overwhelmed, and it just rolled right across to New York. And that was, like you say, that was a tree limb.
Mm-hmm.
You look at those examples and say, well, what happens if someone would do that on purpose somewhere? Or what if they did it in four places in the country, in the four sectors, to do that?
Mm-hmm. You know,
so we're just going to have to wake up. And I know there's people behind the scenes. They're working on this now. They're running hard trying to look at ways to make our system safer and protect and harden this stuff, but they can't run fast enough, given, I think, the threats that could be out there if somebody really wanted to come in and do some damage.
And I guess the biggest obstacle for people like yourself to overcome are the people in the financial offices, or the bookkeepers, who say, gee whiz, why do we have to spend money on that? We've got all this redundancy. I mean, we don't need
anymore. Yeah, and that's where they've got to have some leadership from the command and control and say, look, you know, take care of this. And, the financial people and accountants and people like that, they have a complete role. But if they're making the decision about whether you encrypt or whether you harden or whether you enhance your system, trumping those who are saying, wait a minute, we need this, you got a real problem there, because it's going to be too late when they hack in and penetrate that system. It's just going to be too late. And the other thing is this consolidation. I'm very leery of the cloud, so we put everything together. Now all I have to do is hit one point.
Mm-hmm.
See, in the cloud it is faster. It is, you know, we are the most dynamic country and research and all those things they say. We really are. But we're also, you know, make ourselves more vulnerable. And that's another thing. See, who's pushing the cloud? The marketing people about, we'll put all your stuff on one platform. I don't even know where the platform is. It might not even be in the United States. The platform and all this cloud, which is nothing but a large collection of computers, it could be in a foreign country. They are not in the United States. They're offshore. But if the bad guys, all they have to do is get through one of those, and they're working on that, and they have penetrated them, well, golly, you know. Now, I'm not saying go back to 3x5 cards, you know, that far back, but, you know, is your systems protected?
Yeah.
Have you been sold someone saying we're going to save you X amount of money by going to the cloud, when you might not realize that unwittingly you have now deposited all your records and everything, and you have saved, they've told you you're going to save thousands of dollars, only to find out in 6 months or a year that wherever that is has just been penetrated and they're in your system.
Well, John, that leads me to another question about one place. There, you know, we have the Eastern Power Grid, we have the Western Power Grid, and we have Texas. Mm-hmm. They're pretty well standalone. But there are plans now to put them all together in Clovis, New Mexico, at a place called Tres Amigas. All the power grids come together at one place before being disseminated someplace else. And my question to you would be: Is that what you're talking about? Similar to the cloud, you got one place to hit.
Well, again, let's hope that there are people. There are a lot of smart people working on all this. I've not said anything that they are not fully aware of and know about, but they better be putting in clear controls and checks and security to keep someone from coming into one pod. I just, all the eggs in one basket goes back. That's about one of the oldest adages in the world, but, you know.
Well, John, I got the cue. We got a break for the half hour, but I want to pick up on this subject of Tres Amigas in the second half of the program, so please stick around. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Yeah, Robert Orban. You know, every morning I get up and I look through the Forbes list of the richest people in America. If I'm not there, well, I go to work.